Today's episode of the podcast is sponsored by TrueCar. In order to feel comfortable that you're getting a fair price, you need pricing context, information that empowers you to feel confident. With TrueCar, you'll see what other people in your local market pay for the car that you want. And from there, you can connect with a local TrueCar certified dealer and enjoy a more confident car buying experience. TrueCar will show you what other people in your area paid for the car. Then you'll know what a fair price is, so you can feel confident. Then once you register, you'll see the real pricing on actual inventory. That's competitive pricing offered to you only by a TrueCar certified dealer for an actual vehicle on their lot. It's pricing you'll see before going to a dealership, so you can feel confident when you show up. And with TrueCar, you can connect with a local certified dealer of your choosing, so you can enjoy a quick, easy car buying experience. TrueCar customers are more likely to enjoy a faster buying process when they connect with TrueCar certified dealers. And best of all, TrueCar users save an average of over $3,000 off of MSRP. So when you're ready to buy, visit TrueCar to enjoy a more confident car buying experience. Some features not available in all states. Hey everybody, what's going on? Rob Cisternino back here to talk about why the latest Survivor player lost. And this week, it is none other than good friend of the podcast, Zeke Smith, who went out this week here in Survivor Game Changers. And to discuss it all, a man who knows the Survivor rules so well that he has wrote them many, many years ago and has continued to hone them and improve them as the years go by, the great David Bloomberg. David, how are you?
Good, good. How are you?
Oh, very good, David. And you know, we're talking about the evolution of the rules.
You're still picking on Rule 7.
We're not even at Rule 7. I'm just talking about how you have, like the game, that you have continued to reinventing the way the game is played.
Reinventing how this game is played!
Yes.
It sounded like a subtweet there, Rob.
No. Okay. David, anyway, how are you doing this week?
Oh, pretty good. Pretty good. How about you? You getting all set to go to Toronto?
Yes, getting set, going up to Toronto on Tuesday morning. So by the time most of you are listening to this podcast, I will be on my way, David.
It's the magic of podcasts.
Had a close call with my passport, which came on Thursday right before I talked to Cochrane. So everything is good.
I wish I could say the same about our predictions for, that we made last week.
All right. Well, David, they're always keeping us guessing this season. So it's been very unpredictable, which I think is a positive.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I think that I can't even remember. Who did you pick for this week?
David, don't put me on the spot like this. I think I might have said Andrea or Suri.
Okay, I said Andrea. And, I probably should have suspected that I might be wrong just because of the way things were lining up and she was so tight with Suri. But I just didn't think Sarah would abandon Zeke. And I thought that Zeke would team up with Brad, which I think he was planning to do. Just didn't know that the plan was to wait one more vote before doing that.
Mm-hmm. Well, we'll see what happens as we head into the final nine. But first, we have a lot of business to discuss with Zeke going out. David, did you look at all about what you said about why Zeke lost in Millennials versus Gen X?
I did. And we'll hear a bit about that as we go through here.
Do you feel like that the story is ultimately similar?
Well, I don't want to give too much away or else they won't listen.
Well,
I
guess it was similar. And because I remember what David said back in November. So that's it.
At least we don't have to go back like 10 years.
One less podcast I have to listen to today.
Yes, there are some similar reasons.
All right, David. Well, then let's get the festivities started in terms of Zeke's game.
Well, before we do that, if you don't mind, there were a couple of things that I wanted to mention that one relates to Sarah. And I think you mentioned it on one of the earlier podcasts that, she did fess up, which I thought was good. And she even offered to explain herself to anyone who wanted to listen. And then we didn't see it. Why would the producers do that to us, Rob? Why would they give us that, that little inkling that, oh, she's going to explain it and then not tell us?
I think that they were just sort of giving us the framework that she was going to explain it. I guess everybody just bought her explanation, and I guess, you know, that was that. I mean, if it was interesting, I feel like that they'd show it to us.
Well, I guess so, but I think what we find interesting might be a little different. You know, we wanted to know, was it because she, you know, said that she just turned on Debbie or something like that? But yeah, we'll never know now, yeah. Or at least not until.
Would have been nice to know. Would have been nice to know. But, you know, that's what we have, you know, interviews for. And maybe we can find out from Sarah or somebody on that side eventually what she told them.
Yeah, yeah.
But Zeke said, I thought it was because Debbie was in charge over there.
Yeah, Zeke also said something very odd in another interview. Did you see that one about the bamboo?
Yes, David. We've discussed this with Josh's scoop from the Wiggle Room.
Okay. Yeah, I haven't had a chance to listen to that yet, so I'll have to wait and hear what you two had to say about that particular mess.
Sure. Okay. David, anything else before we get into Zeke's game?
Well, I do want to admit that when they wrote down Ty's name and, you know, we saw that, it fooled me, just like you were fooled last week. I was fooled this week. I thought Zeke was safe until Jeff Probst pulled out that first vote with his name on it. And then I was like, oh, that's a bad sign for him.
Yeah.
So they got me. They had Sierra voting the wrong way as a decoy and or maybe as a insurance for an idol. And they fooled me for those couple of minutes there.
All right, David. So what about Zeke?
Well, you know, I was hoping he could find a way to sneak through. But as Andrea herself tweeted, hell hath no fury like an Andrea scorned. So the question is whether Andrea being scorned was the only reason Zeke was voted out, or how much it related to fallout from the Varner Tribal Council or other factors. And we'll figure it out as we go through why Zeke lost.
Are you contemplating a don't piss off Andrea rule?
Well, we'll have to see if she plays again first.
Okay.
But it might be a good appendix.
Yes. Or a replacement for Rule 7. You know, it just anything. Anything. Okay. The first rule is to scheme and plot. Check and check.
Yeah. I mean, you mentioned looking back at what I had said last year. And when I talked about him last season, I said, I think it should be clear to everyone who watched the show that Zeke knew how to scheme and plot. He's a Rahap fan. He listened to Evolution of Strategy. He came into the game to play it. And then I also combined a discussion of the third rule, which is to be flexible, with that first, because the heart of Zeke's strategy was his flexibility. And I'm going to do that again now. Zeke never really left game mode. He was voted out, was in Ponderosa, had 2 weeks at home, and was back at it again. So it's no surprise to me that he was already telling us in a week two web confessional about how good he was at cultivating relationships, getting people to tell him everything. He made an early bond with people like Ozzy and Sarah, and he set things up to try to keep the bigger threats than himself in the game, which, of course, was a major reason that he wanted to save Ozzy, but wasn't as concerned about keeping Varner around when it got to that point.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, though, he knew he had to get rid of certain threats, such as the way he kept his tribe focused on getting rid of Sandra, which, of course, was something nobody had ever been able to do before. He was willing to make the necessary moves to get himself further in the game, and he was not going to be held back by sticking to a single alliance. He was incredibly flexible, as he was his first season. He could vote out someone from an alliance and then immediately join with the leftover people to vote with them the next time, which was something he was setting himself up to do with Brad and Troyzan if Andrea hadn't struck first. With that said, I don't think we want to go into every little thing that Zeke did right in regards to this rule because, well, the podcast is about why players lost. And I think we can suffice it to say he definitely knew that he needed to scheme and plot.
Right. And probably his biggest strong suit in the game. Fair to say?
Absolutely.
Okay. So rule number two, don't scheme and plot too much or keep scheming secret and don't backstab until you need to. Do we feel like a violation occurred at the point where Zeke wanted to make a move against Andrea and went to Sierra? Or as he said in the exit interview, him and Sarah decided this.
Right. I would say, you know, you listed three things. And if the question is whether he violated this rule on all three of those things, I'd say the answer to all of them is yes.
Okay.
You know, we can start with not keeping his scheming secret. The rule specifically says that some players may say they want to know ahead of time if they're being voted out, but it's almost always better to blindside them rather than giving them an opportunity to turn the tables on you. Zeke said in Web Confessionals that he knew he shouldn't have told Varner that he was getting voted out, but he just couldn't bring himself to blindside him. Zeke had been playing for so long that he admitted he lost a bit of his cutthroat nature, and in his own words, he got a bit soft. The problem that this caused, of course, is obvious. First, Varner ran to Sarah and Andrea and blew up Zeke's spot, got a little nasty there. Zeke thought he smoothed things over with Sarah and Andrea, and, you know, he probably did for Sarah, but I think it raises the question of whether this was the first sign of a problem with Andrea. After this, he knew, in his own words, tribal council is going to be messy tonight. He certainly had no idea how messy it was going to be. And Varner was able to prep himself for that tribal council because he knew he was a target. Moving past that tribal council to another one, we had another issue with open scheming that had me scratching my head at the time. And this was the tribal council a few weeks ago. Zeke was explaining to Jeff Probst and, of course, everyone else in the game that you have to make your allies believe that they can beat you. I was watching this and I'm thinking at the time, why are you telling everyone your plans? I don't see how you can try to make your allies believe that they can beat you when you're telling them that you're going to try to make them believe that they can beat you. I think Zeke may have given up too much information to the people he had to convince to think a certain way. Because if I had been there and I had listened to that, and then Zeke came to me and said, take me to the end, there's no way I can win against you, I would immediately know he was lying based on what he said in front of me at tribal council. So, you know, like I said, those comments were a bit of a head scratcher to me. Next up, I have to answer the question of whether he backstabbed too soon. And this is pretty much the same question we asked last season. You know, did he move too quickly? At the time, I noted, if you don't do it, they could make the move on you first. It's a game of chicken. You don't exactly know when to strike. Zeke got it into his mind that Andrea was going to launch a first strike on him. He explained in interviews that this stemmed from a change in the way Andrea was treating him after the Varner Tribal Council. It's just not something we saw. He said at Ponderosa that he went for Andrea at the time, that he thought it was right to go for her. And he said in a web confessional this week that he is certain Andrea would have cut him as fast as he did to her. But again, from what we saw, I can't say whether or not that's true. Instead, what we saw was just how pissed she was that he turned on her when she thought they were more than just allies in this game. I feel like Zeke was still playing Millennials versus Gen X, that version of the game, and Andrea obviously wasn't. What I mean by that is he noted in interviews that in his first season, people would flip and switch sides, and back at camp, everyone was still friendly. This time, he saw a tendency for there to be a nastiness in the game. And it feels to me like he thought he could flip on Andrea and she wouldn't take it personally, just like he wouldn't have if she had done it to him. But she took it very personally and reacted accordingly. Then they made up somewhat, which we'll discuss more later, but he still fully intended to target Andrea, and she clearly knew it. As Zeke said in his final words, it was smart for Andrea to come after him because he was about to come after Andrea. And that leaves us with one more question to answer for this rule. Did Zeke scheme and plot too much overall? In a web confessional this week, he said he was in the middle and acknowledged that it could be a dangerous position. We had already seen previously that lots of people didn't believe Zeke when he was actually telling the truth. So imagine where he found himself now. I do think Zeke could have stuck around maybe a little longer if he had pulled back and tried to sink a bit below the radar.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, in your interview with him, Zeke told you his game was over, so he might as well go out swinging. It's hard to argue with the state of mind he was in. If people were flat out telling him that nobody could beat him at the end, that obviously didn't bode well for his long-term game. So he decided to take the bull by the horns and try to play the game hard. we'll obviously never know what would have happened if he had just been more laid back instead.
I thought that was an interesting point that you were making about how in millennials versus Gen X, there was, for the most part, this idea that you could vote with anybody whenever you wanted. And then after the game, everybody would be cool with one another. And then here, that was not the case. And I think it's just an interesting observation between, you know, the first time players and people who are coming in, especially here with a pre-existing relationship. It's a bit of a different dynamic.
Yeah. And, you know, I would have thought under normal circumstances, I would think that the returning players would treat it more like a game and less personally because they've been through it before. So it was odd when he was saying that. But you can see it. Like I said, you could see it with Andrea. And, you know, I think historically it's the first time players who treat it less like a game. But for whatever reason, on millennials versus Gen X, you know, they definitely were all gamers there, and it was not personal. And for whatever reason, for this group of returning players, it really has been.
And interestingly, just to track it through Andrea's Survivor career, that Andrea is a person who came back and then, you know, had relationships with Francesca in real life and then voted against her once Survivor Kara Moen ended up starting. And then so many people were mad at her. And I think that Andrea probably said, like, hey, this was, you know, for the game. I made a move for my game. It wasn't something that was personal. But it was interesting to see how she was so upset with Zeke, who she knew from real life, ending up wanting to come after her. And, you know, it's harder to cope with, I think, when you're the person who's being betrayed.
Right.
It's easier to say when you're the betrayer to say, yeah, but it's just a game.
Right. Exactly. I mean, and I also think probably the fact that, you know, she did it to Francesca on, you know, what, day three,
mm-hmm.
When you're not quite crazy out of your mind with hunger and weakness. And now, you know, she's finding out about it, you know, day whatever it was that she originally found out that Zeke was gunning for her. I think that she was probably in a more vulnerable state at that point.
Yeah. Okay. So then let's go to rule number three, David, to be flexible. You have already applauded Zeke's flexibility earlier in the rules. So what do you have to say about Zeke and his ability to stay flexible?
Well, I mean, I pretty much said it. You know, I combined that discussion into rule one. So not much more to say. I think we can move on.
Hold on, not so fast, because I'm not done talking about being flexible, because I want to take a moment and thank a sponsor for the podcast, and that is the Flex Wash from Samsung and Flex Dry from Samsung, available at the Home Depot, the washer and dryer pair, David. These innovative appliances are the first ever to allow you to wash two loads and dry two loads of laundry at the same time in one machine. Doesn't get more flexible than that.
No, it doesn't. That's even more flexible than Zeke.
Even more flexible than Zeke. So when you go to do your laundry, now you don't have to mix different colors and fabrics together, risking color transfer or fabric damage. Flex Wash integrates a large capacity lower washer for the everyday stuff, and then an additional washer on the top for separate colors or delicates. And then Flex Wash integrates a large tumble dryer for everyday items and a flat dryer for delicates. The washer and dryer both have innovative features to make doing laundry easier for you and your clothes. I watched a video all about this the other day, David. Flex Wash offers a steam wash option for removing stains and self-clean to keep the washer odor-free. And then Flex Wash also features multi-steam to steam away odors and wrinkles so you don't have to iron anything. And Sensor Dry optimizes drying temperatures to avoid damage to your clothes. And guess what? Both are Wi-Fi connected, allowing you to set and start the machine and receive an alert notification when the load is finished. Together, Flex Wash and Flex Dry offers the ultimate flexibility to provide the best possible care for your clothes. And of course, both are available at the Home Depot. David, rule number four is don't let your emotions control you.
Yeah, we discussed this a bit earlier when talking about how Zeke told Varner about, you know, that upcoming tribal council, how the vote was going to go. And as I said, you know, Zeke knew he made an error and was upset at himself. But I also mentioned that he said in a web confessional a few episodes ago that his emotions were starting to get to him. you know, I can't imagine the stress that goes into playing back to back like he did, compounded by what happened in the Varner Tribal Council. So I'm going to break this rule myself by saying that I feel bad to criticize, but, you know, well, explaining each loss is why I'm here. So I do think that Zeke's emotional state took him off his game somewhat. Mm-hmm. It started with Varner and then spiraled from there, as you might reasonably expect. Several times in this rule, I talk about how this is a game and you wouldn't let emotions interfere if you were on Jeopardy or Wheel of Fortune or something like that. But those comparisons obviously fall apart when a situation of this magnitude hits. You know, something like this is obviously few and far between, but clearly it does happen. And Zeke's emotions were already starting to play with his mind a bit. It had to be incredibly difficult to keep them bottled up and focus solely on strategy after everything that happened. So, you know, like I said, I feel bad to say it, but there were obviously some problems with this rule due to his unique circumstances there.
All right, then let's talk about rule number five, David. Pretend to be nice. Play the social game. Keep your politics and controversial beliefs to yourself. Now, how did Zeke do with playing nice and doing the social game?
Well, last season, I said he told you that his goal was to have a relationship with everyone. In other words, he was pretending to be nice, and I'd say he mostly did a good job of it. This season, I think we saw that again. Indeed, his attempt to have relationships with everyone was probably one of the things that got Andrea mad when she saw him chatting with Brad. You and I have already discussed, you know, that it was more difficult to jump around this season, even though, you know, I might think that it would be easier. And, you know, already discussed how Zeke said this was somewhat meaner in that regard, this season was. Whereas last season, people would recognize a good move and separate it from their emotions. But of course, Andrea was, as we've mentioned, pissed off. You and Akiva discussed whether reconciliation was possible and might have been a good move for all involved. It does look like they reconciled at the time, but Andrea was still suspicious, and it turns out she was right to be. You know, when it gets down to it, the social game can only overcome so much when there were still too many questions about where Zeke stood strategically. So I do think that, you know, he played this part of the game well. But when you have someone like Andrea who's saying, I don't care if he's, you know, made a truce with me now, I still don't trust him. Well, all the social game in the world isn't going to help that.
I do think, though, that Zeke did a good job with making potential voting allies. Like, he used the social game well to sort of like open up the door to potentially vote with people. We got to see that on the reward challenge with him and Brad talking about the football game, which ultimately ended up just pissing off Andrea to some degree. I think that at that point, Brad would have voted with anybody. Zeke didn't really need to win him over too much. But I think that you got to see where Zeke, as we saw with Chris and different players, that, you know, he will tailor his conversation to form a bond and then ultimately use that to get into voting with that person.
Right. And I think there's something else. You know, one thing that Zeke said in interviews was after the Varner Tribal Council, Andrea never checked in on him. And I think that Zeke plays the same type of game that we've seen with other people, which is he checks in on his allies. He checks in, well, on all the other players, checks in just to talk to them, keep the lines of communication open. So when Andrea and Ceree and some others stopped doing that with him, he saw that as a change in their behavior. And when people stop talking to you in Survivor, you know, that's a huge red flag. So he was good at not only keeping those lines of communication open, but also recognizing when someone else wasn't.
And Andrea comes out of the Boston Rob School of Survivor. She's got to know check-in is important. Got to do the check-in.
You got to do the check-in, but you can't talk to the people you're not allies
right.
with, or else you get chopped.
Right. You check in with your allies, but you also can't talk to the other people. Don't be checking in with other people.
Right. She'll send people out in pairs.
That's right. Well, they were buddies, but that he didn't send anybody out in pairs, that he didn't get that chance.
Ah, well, You know, the buddy system has to go to an extreme sometimes.
Okay. David, rule six is don't be too much of a threat. I know that this was something that Zeke was concerned about, and then this matter was taken out of his hands.
Right, right. We'll start with last season, because last season we talked about one part of this rule that actually normally says this type of behavior would make you a threat, but last season it didn't, and that was the part that talks about knowledge and understanding of the game, such as if you've been studying reality TV strategy, watched every edition of the show, etc. You normally don't want to let people know that. Last season didn't matter. That described most of them. But that was certainly not true this season. You know, Zeke let it be known that he was this type of player in part to shield the real reasons that he was brought back this season. But while it wasn't threatening to the other players last season, it certainly was this time. That was only one reason he was seen as a threat, and by no means, you know, the most important reason. As you said in one of the podcasts this week, and as I alluded to earlier, Zeke's game was blown up at Tribal Council. And we know it changed his life. It also changed the way he was going to be perceived going forward within the game of Survivor. He immediately became the guy with the story, you know, capital T, capital S there. The one who nobody wanted to face at the end. And one somewhat obvious thing that I say in this rule is that if no one wants to face you in the final three, you probably won't make it to the final three. This is a situation we don't see terribly often on Survivor, but it is there occasionally. We've had people who are seen as having a story get voted off just for that very reason. And we've seen other players hide their stories, as Jeremy did with Val being pregnant, for those very reasons. I was recently talking to someone who played competitive volleyball.
A blind item.
Blind item. And she told me about how they played against a team where one of the players had a congenital problem with one of her arms. So her coach told them all to hit to that girl's bad side. And, you know, that sounds like kind of a dick move. And the players actually didn't listen to the coach. But the situation is that it's a competition. If a coach or a player sees an opening on the other team, doesn't he or she have to try to exploit it? You know, and that situation is somewhat similar here in that, on the one hand, it's terrible on a human level for players to say that what happened to Zeke shouldn't have happened, but because it did, they have to vote him out because he could beat them too easily at the end. On the other hand, they can't just all give up and hand him $1 million either. The emotional part of them, just as humans, had to be saying, well, we can't vote Zeke out for this reason. But the players, you have to look at that and say, but if we don't, he'll beat us. And that made him a threat in that regard, too. Even that wasn't the only reason he was a threat, because his gameplay and his intelligence made him stand out as well. Andrea knew he was going to target her, and she flat out said in a web confessional, he's my biggest threat. He noted in Ponderosa that being seen as a smart guy who knows a lot about Survivor intimidates people, which made him a threat. Aubrey said in a web confessional that Zeke was probably the smartest person out there. She felt like he was working on a big move, and she didn't want to wait to find out what it was. Even Ozzy was talking to Zeke at Ponderosa about how it sucks to have a big target. So, yeah, Zeke was a huge threat to pretty much everyone left in the game.
Right. Also, a phenomenal performer every time a puzzle came up as well. I think that had to be a little bit on people's minds. And really, Suri talking about how he knows more about the game than she does, and she's played four times. So I think that the wealth of Zeke's Survivor knowledge was pretty well understood.
Right. And what we see then is he has, you know, threat on top of threat on top of threat. And there's just not a whole lot you can do at that point.
Okay, David, let's really dig in here, okay? This is the important stuff. Rule 7, vote out the weak and then the strong, then the weak and then the strong. What did the players get this one right this week?
Well, you know, there aren't a whole lot of weak players left. Generally, around this time, you know, they're going to be going after those who can win immunity challenges or who can organize others. Last season, Zeke was targeted in part for the second reason, organizing others, and I think the same is true again this season. Andrea, in particular, knew that Zeke could bring people together to target her, So she had to launch her first strike. The question is whether it was the right move for the rest of the alliance. It's hard to say, but I think it probably was. It'll depend on how fluid things get from here on out.
All right, good. I'm glad that we got that nailed down for Rule 7. David, the appendix, the first one, do whatever it takes to get the idol. Zeke did not end up with an immunity idol this season. I don't think he had one in Millennials versus Gen X either. So does Zeke do whatever it takes to get idols?
Well, you know, obviously we didn't see him doing any idol hunting. And he commented in interviews that he didn't want to initially be seen as the sneaky one looking for idols everywhere because, of course, he was coming back sight unseen. I suspect it's probably yet another situation where he looked for idols but couldn't find anything, so we just weren't shown any video about it on the show. He certainly did not go to Ty levels of looking for idols, but even if he had, well, Ty beat him to it. So it's an unknown.
And maybe the first time that this is relevant, what about the final appendix of the final tribal council? Because there was so much concern about Zeke and his story for the final tribal council.
Yeah, you're right. We are finally at the point where players are looking ahead to the jury phase. And as we have already discussed, it's clear that this decision was impacted by players worrying about that. I do think that there could have probably been other opportunities for most of the players to get rid of Zeke before, you know, the final three. And I think Zeke said something similar in interviews. This was still an opportune time to do it. And I also think it wasn't even a bad move for Sarah, since we know that Zeke had told her if she had to cut him, go ahead and do it. So even though she, in a way, turned on him, I think Sarah has a good chance of getting Zeke's vote at the end.
Certainly.
Yeah, so that's a good jury seed that she has planted there. Now, from the reaction of Debbie when Sarah admitted to being the one who turned, I think we can guess that Sarah is not going to get Debbie's vote at the end. But at least she has Zeke to balance that out.
Well, just to add to the Sarah and Zeke stuff, Zeke said in a number of his interviews, he had said with Sarah that, hey, don't stick your neck out to save me in the game. So there did seem to be some sort of understanding that Sarah, if she felt like she needed to, had Zeke's permission to stab him in the back.
Right. Absolutely.
Okay. All right, David. So ultimately, in your estimation, why did Zeke lose the game?
Well, new Parade interviewer, Mike Bloom. Have you heard of him?
I have heard.
Okay. He asked Zeke what he thought his legacy would be. And Zeke said he loves to play, but is probably not the greatest. I think Zeke may be a little too hard on himself there. He plays hard. He makes moves. He thinks strategically. And he had several things working against him this time around. First was that he played back-to-back with no chance to decompress, let alone watch his season. Second was what happened with Varner, which threw everything for a big loop. Last season, I noted that Zeke said in an interview that there's no better way to leave the game than to be voted out because nobody can beat you. Makes me wonder if he was thinking of this season as well when he gave that interview.
Mm-hmm.
At the time, I agreed that there was some comfort in that, but of course, players need to try to convince everyone around them that they aren't the most threatening player left, even as they try to control the game. It's interesting looking back, because what I said in that podcast last year is very similar to what Zeke said in the Tribal Council a few weeks ago that I had mentioned. But in this case, Zeke had a combination of things happen, some of which were in his control and some of which just were not. Zeke made moves based on his read of the situation after the Varner Tribal Council. Then he had to try to course correct when things didn't go as planned. I noted in the second rule that so much of Survivor is in the timing. If you don't launch the first strike, you could be the one getting knocked out of the game. Andrea saw that and launched at the right time for her game. I said last season that Zeke made some great moves, and he made one probably just a little too early, which helped bring into focus how big of a threat he was to win it all. Most of that is accurate again this season. I would only add that he admitted he let the game aspect escape just a little too much, which is certainly understandable in this situation. And he became even more of a threat to win it all than the previous season. And that is why Zeke lost.
All right, David, let's move ahead. We have this very tight situation at the final nine where it really could go either way. A really important swing may or may not happen this week. And all eyes are on Officer Sarah heading into the final nine. Do you have a prediction how this plays out?
Yeah, I do. But, you know, it'll probably be wrong, but we'll go through it anyway.
Okay.
So you mentioned tight. It is a tight situation, and we have some tight pairs as well. Andrea and Suri are tight. I would say Suri and Michaela, also tight. Aubrey seems to be close to them as well. I don't think any of that four are going to flip anytime soon.
Mm-hmm.
So, like you said, comes down to Officer Sarah. I just don't think she'll jump back to her old allies either, at least not for a little while. So that raises the question of whether anyone can break into the fivesome. I think Sierra may have the best chance, but I still don't know what role she would play there. How does she wiggle her way in there? So I think the five will intend to knock off Brad or Ty. The problem, of course, is that Ty saw his name come up multiple times this past week. So I think we can almost guarantee that he uses one of his immunity idols, this tribal council.
Mm-hmm.
Which means if he gets targeted and there's no backup splitting plan, one of the five could easily get idled out of the game. So now we have the question, which one will it be? Well, if Ty doesn't tell anyone he has an idol, and I think he would be smart to keep it a complete secret, then he can't organize any resistance. He can't, you know, himself set up some alternate secondary target that will get it when the idol comes out. So either the person he votes against will have their torch snuffed, or whoever gets the votes of someone like a Brad or Troyzan, you know, if they're just shooting off in random directions, or maybe they've been told to aim at a secondary target. I have to think Andrea is at the top of the list, and I know this is the third week in a row that, you know, I would be predicting her to go. But as Cochran mentioned in your recap with him, she's the one pushing ideas, which can be a problem. If she's viewed as a leader as well as a challenge threat, then she should be the one getting targeted for an idling. So, you know, I'm just going to stay true to the course and pick Andrea to go again.
Andrea could go. I'm so really wondering what happens with Sarah, because she and Zeke were talking about going with Brad and Troy and Michaela to make a five. So if that was what their plan was, now Zeke is gone. So is that still the plan? And she wants to work with Brad and Troy and Michaela at seven? Is that going to be a four potentially? Or is there somebody else that she can bring over? Because ideally, she wants to be in a three with somebody. And with Michaela and Zeke, she controlled the three, and then Brad and Troy were the two. Could they potentially still want something like that? Could they bring Aubrey in and then try to do something like that? It's tough. Andrea is a viable person. I'll say the sheriff. Maybe she stays the course this week and targets the sheriff, and then ultimately that opens the door for maybe putting that four-person alliance back together, where she doesn't want to leave Brad and Sierra and Troyzan all together, because then there'll be a final three if she switches to them and they get down to a five. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I somewhat got lost in all of that, but I think I understand where you were going there.
Yeah, I'm basically saying that if Brad and Sierra and Troyzan want to go to the final three and Sarah has any ideas of flipping again, you know, you got to get Sierra out at that point if she wants her spot.
Right, absolutely. You know, the question is, will Andrea go along with voting out Sierra, because Andrea has been somewhat grooming Sierra, which is another good reason for Sarah to target her. But I don't know if Andrea was doing that just to kind of keep Sierra on her toes, or if, you know, she really does want to do something with Sierra. I do think it's interesting that Zeke said in some of his interviews that Sierra was somewhat beat down at this point, that she just you know,
he implied
was like,
Sierra wanted to quit
go.
The game. Yeah.
Yeah. Which or, obviously
or
we haven't seen.
I shouldn't say wanted to quit the game, but wouldn't have minded being voted out.
Right. So it is possible that, you know, they just say, okay, never mind. We'll go after Sierra because she's, you know, clearly doesn't want to be here anymore. But I know that you also have experience with people who said they don't want to be here anymore, and then the tribe didn't do what they wanted.
David, we're here. We're talking about Survivor Game Changers. We're talking about season 34. I don't know why you're living yes. in the past. Okay.
Sorry to bring up bad memories.
All right, David. So, of course, so much more going on with this Survivor season and plenty of coverage on robhasawebsite.com by our esteemed panel of bloggers. Scott Gallagher has his blog post up ranking his top five Stephen King films and the top three players. We're not talking about the guy from Hunted, not that Stephen King. Michael Trudeau goes into the world of sports to discuss this episode that seemed like a long challenge. Christian Williams explores the breaking a deadlock, Sarah's expert testimony, and how aiming for optimal may have hurt Zeke's game. And also Catherine Lucas will be looking back at a very flippant flipper to discuss the gameplay this week. That's all on robhasawebsite.com in the blog section. You can go to robhasawebsite.com/blog. David.
When you were talking about a flippant flipper, I thought you were talking about, you know, Debbie flipping the bird there.
No, that's she's a bird flipper. I think that's different.
Ah.
David, what's the hashtag you want to go with this week?
Well, you know, several times I found myself talking about Andrea launching a first strike. So that sounded like a good one. First strike.
First strike. All right, David. So you and I will be back together. And pretty soon we're going to have to get into some mega edition of why everybody lost and why somebody won. There's 9 players left. Only 2 episodes until we get to the finale, right?
Wow. Yeah, it's getting close.
So I wonder if we will have next week, not this episode, I wonder if we'll lose 2 people on the episode on the 17th, because that was the same format that they did back at Millennials versus Gen X that we ended up losing Will Wall and Sunday in the episode before the finale, and then go into the finale with a final 6.
Well, you know, if they do that, it makes me wonder if it's going to be some sort of a pagonging as we get closer. We'll have to see.
Yeah, but it really wasn't a pagonging in Millennials versus Gen X.
That's true. That's
yeah.
true.
Okay, so we ultimately will see how it all plays out. Looking forward to seeing so many of you guys up in Toronto this week. And David, you hold down the fort here in America, okay?
I will do that. I will cover the whole country.
Okay. All right, everybody. Have a good one. Take care. Bye.